Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. The highly praised historical fiction, Penelope's Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world by Carol J. DeMars, occurred during the 17th century golden age of the United Provinces of the Netherlands. With the country's wealth and superpower, why would a vivacious niece of a wealthy Dutch merchant hastily marry her father's brilliant student? Carol's book then takes the readers to one of the least desirable outposts in the Dutch Empire when the new couple decided to sail across the dangerous Atlantic Ocean. The lovers arrived at the city of New Amsterdam, today's Manhattan. Penelope's Song also follows the story of an aristocratic English widow who traded her land of birth for New England, seeking liberty of conscience. Witness a story that combines romance, history, and thrills. Carol graduated from California Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks, California. She was a sociology major, interested in social change, the Bible, European church history, and the growth of the American churches during colonial and pioneer periods. She earned a teaching credential at California State University, Northridge, and taught English and United States history for several years. When she decided to pursue research as an independent scholar, she returned to CSUN for further graduate studies and qualified to join Phi Kappa Phi, the prestigious National Scholastic Society. Carol now resides in Georgia. Penelope's Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world, is her first book. And author Carol J. DeMars joins us on This Week in America. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. I'm delighted to be here.
What a great story you tell in Penelope's Song. Really looking forward to our conversation. The book title, Penelope's Song, a 17th Century Tale for a 21st Century World, has an unusual subtitle. And who was Penelope? Talk about the background of the book and where the title came from.
Okay. Penelope was one of my ancestral generations ago. She first appeared in Long Island Records in 1648 and later in East New Jersey, where she became a well-known legend. In common with most legends, there is an element of truth, but often difficult to determine what is fact and what has morphed with the passage of time and faulty memory. To advance the novel's purpose and narrative, I've added my own fanciful equations. As for the subtitle, the long one, it is often said that if we don't learn from the past, we are doomed to repeat it. From my point of view, human nature, despite its complexity, is remarkably consistent from century to century, millennia to millennia, and across cultures. The 16th and 17th centuries in England and Europe were characterized by religious intolerance and often torture and imprisonment, with consequential upheaval and threat to individual autonomy and well-being. During that age of seafaring empires, social, political, economic, and religious relationships were often fraught asunder. Today, I seriously believe freedom of religion is yet to fully thrive and is perhaps even at stake. One of my goals was to delve into the past through the lives of historic and fictional characters, to awaken that we also are treading in troubled waters more than most of us realize.
You know, and the book accomplishes that. It gets us thinking as you're reading Penelope's Song. Our guest is the author, Carol DeMars. The book is available wherever books are sold. Send you to barnesandnoble.com. DemarsPenelopeSong.com is her website. We'll give you all that as we go through the conversation. And, of course, you'll find it and link directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Carol, could you provide specific passages that help the listening audience maybe connect between 1643, when part one begins, and 2023?
However, I'm going to direct a future reader to pages 5 through 9 at the very beginning, outline the path to liberty of conscience, what we call freedom of religion. When the Reformation officially begins in Germany in 1517, to the worldwide 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation in 2017. You might call it the religious infrastructure by proclamation and lawful act that helps us understand the impact on my characters in 1643 and our nation's history since. A quote introduces each part of Penelope's song. Part one begins with a quote from English philosopher and political theorist Joseph Priestley. The laws of a country are necessarily connected with everything belonging to the people of it, so that a thorough knowledge of them and their progress would inform us of everything that was most useful to be known about them. That was written in 1788 by Joseph Priestley, the year our Second Continental Congress ratified Article 6 of the Constitution pertaining to religion, and 4 years before the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or of prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Priestley's insight helps us to better understand how that kind of thinking impacted Dutch law on citizens, my characters' lives, and the founding of New York. Alas, when I selected this his quotation, little did I dream how apropos it would be to the current constitutional drama that now engulfs our nation. My longest quote, and it's the only long one, that is on page 148. It describes the conflicts that led to the first English Civil War near the end of 1642. It is very worrisome today. Hard lines were drawn between conflicting visions, prerogatives, and stratagems, Crown and Parliament. Their worlds collided, unable to occupy the same space. How is it that a people, a society, a country seemingly holds contrasting values and tensions with the ship of state on calm and turbulent seas, perhaps for decades, generations, or centuries, to be sure changes take place? Goes back and forth with some displacement, a vessel forever in motion, seldom resting. Somehow the fabric of accommodation, woven of shared and disputed values, expands and contracts, but the ship remains intact and sails on. There are times, however, when deeply embedded stresses are too great, human psyches rigid, unyielding, refusing to credit the other of equally profound principles and loyalties worthy of their regard. Even to spare loved ones mortal anguish, and for the sake of survival as a people, they were too contentious to share the same arc.
The book really gets us thinking. It's not only an enjoyable, entertaining tale that you tell in Penelope's Song, but it does get us thinking. And the book is available at, I'm going to mention Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. Carol's website is DamarsPenelopesSong.com. Damars is D-A-M-A-R-S. The author and our guest on the program is Carol Damars. All this information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. The title, Penelope's Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world. What do you, Carol, what do you want the readers to learn and appreciate when they read Penelope's Song? What do you hope the takeaway is?
I want them to have a more informed understanding of the foundational struggle for freedom of religion enshrined in our Constitution, as just noted, and the significance of Dutch settlement along the Hudson River and Deep Harbor of New Amsterdam. 200 years before our Constitution, the United Provinces of the Netherlands formulated and signed the Union of Utrecht in 1579 that guaranteed freedom of religion. Thousands and thousands of refugees in Europe and England who suffered much for their religious beliefs and practice migrated to the Netherlands, especially Holland. Thus, when the Dutch founded and governed their colony for only 4 decades, their contribution to the eastern seaboard of the 17th century was multicultural, multilingual, and multireligious, including persecuted Jews, Portuguese Jews. Unfortunately, their imperfect but unique and valuable influence was often reduced to one or two pages in most U.S. history textbooks. Prioritized also and woven into the narrative of my characters' lives was the demise of the ancient Eastern Woodland original peoples and what they suffered when my ancestors and other colonists migrated to their land and tragically displaced them. On a more personal note, Penelope's song is dedicated to the healers, the dreamers, the lovers, believers. When I first learned about Penelope, these words breathed life into the vision of a novel, like the refrain of a song, and so the main title. Ricky Allen Smith, author of The Junk Drawer, A Place for Our Dreams, emphasized during his interview with you, Rick, that we all have dreams. Hold on to your dreams. Never give up. A through line of my novel as well, my characters' dreams and obstacles they overcame would humble the best of us, yet hopefully inspire and motivate. Through the exploration of their lives, historical fiction, as Ricky said, connects us with another place and time.
Well, and you do an excellent job of doing that in the book Penelope's Song. Now, as a former history teacher, you developed a professional interest in New York's underserved history of Dutch colonization. There appears to be a personal interest. Is that so?
Yes. Besides Penelope, I have many ancestors among the early Dutch colonists who also sought religious freedom of belief and practice in the Netherlands. Very open to multicultural opportunities in high school, I was selected to be an American Field Service foreign exchange student. Students from all across the United States were flown to Montreal and boarded the Holland American SS Seven Seas for a 10-day study voyage to Rotterdam. There we loaded onto buses to the Amsterdam airport, where we boarded planes for our final destinations, in my case, Finland, and a formative time in my young life. My husband studied art under Professor Ben Weber, who migrated to California from the Netherlands after World War II. He was later knighted by Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands for his student exchange program between our two countries. It was Sir Weber who recognized my husband's exceptional talent and encouraged him to further pursue art. Rembrandt is a Dutch master, of course, but the work of Johannes Vermeer, who lived in Delft during the time of Penelope's Song, appeals to me. My husband and I fell in love. Excuse me, I'm going to get emotional. While writing letters to each other during his post-college travel to study European art. He died 5 years ago. Sorry.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that, and I certainly understand the emotion that you have. This whole project is so personal for you. Please, if you can, go ahead.
Vermeer's girl reading a letter at an open window was an obvious choice for the cover and the inspiration to embellish the story with the letters of my characters.
It is such a touching story that Carol is telling, and it unfolds in her historical fiction, Penelope's Song, A 17th Century Tale for a 21st Century World by Carol J. DeMars, DAMARS. Her website is DeMarsPenelopesSong.com. Book available at Barnes & Noble, the usual places. I understand now why part one of your book is in Amsterdam. How did you choose the year? How did you choose 1643?
For my readers and for plot development, it was important to highlight the Greek port city of Amsterdam, as you referred, its remarkable 17th century prosperity and advanced cultural achievements seldom fully explored with our students. As to the choice of 1643, I needed a year that approximated the time the legendary Penelope would have sailed to the New World prior to the first documented record of the real Penelope on Long Island. I noticed that the Dutch West India ship, the Swole, translated sturdy, departed from Amsterdam for the New World in early 1643. The meaning of the ship's name would be helpful to my plot. The first battle of the English Civil War was just prior to 1643, an important pivotal date for England and historical figures that appear in my book, such as King Charles I, Lady Deborah Moody, and her son Sir Henry, a baronet like his deceased father. To pursue liberty of conscience, she was compelled to leave for New England, but was later condemned in December 1642 by the Massachusetts Puritans for her opposition to infant baptism. She was to be exiled by them in 1643, and that event changed the trajectory of her life again. Meanwhile, New Amsterdam director Willem Kieft incited a ruthless and unwarranted attack on an innocent indigenous village that by treaty was under his protection. That horrific act radically inflicted disaster on the entire region and everyone in it.
With us on the program is Carol DeMars. We're talking about her book, Penelope's Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world. Boy, time is going by so quickly. It's always interesting, as you're talking about the book and talking to authors of historical fiction, how you balance historical facts with fictional elements in your historical novel. How did you do that? What challenges did you have in having that proper balance?
Well, first, I love research, especially history, and always thought my first book of any sort would be nonfiction. I never imagined the first published work would be a novel.
Yes. However,
the intriguing legend about my ancestral grandmother, combined with diligent search of relevant historical records, yielded a treasure trove of surprises for fact and fantasy. I wanted my fellow Americans to learn more about this early era of colonial America that is fascinating, underrated, and seminal to our understanding of the American dream at its best.
You mentioned surprises. Were there surprises during your research that maybe changed the trajectory of your novel? Anything unexpected that you maybe sort of thought, maybe I should be going in a different direction here?
Most certainly, and I did go in many different directions than I previously had conceived that would follow in the book. The primary theme, liberty of conscience, never changed. But I found information about Sir Henry Moody in British sources that were previously not known to New York historians. I decided then to make him a more significant figure and was inspired to delve more fully into the English Civil War in which he fought, and cavalier poetry such as the well-known "Stone walls do not imprison Meg, nor iron bars a cage," by cavalier Richard Lovelace in 1642. This unforeseen and significant inclusion enriched plot and character development, and I think makes Penelope's Song more compelling.
The book is Penelope's Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world. The author is Carol J. DeMars, D-A-M-A-R-S. Her website, DeMarsPenelopesong.com. Book, of course, available Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I know this book has been a very emotional process for you in telling the story and researching the story and going back and putting all of this together. Were there particular scenes that were challenging for you to write as you were putting together Penelope's Song?
Absolutely. And maybe it's because I'm a female, I don't know, and in a different era. But despite generations of films depicting violent battle scenes and fighting between settlers and original inhabitants, I had no imaginative capacity to make these events in my novel real to the reader as they happened. It's just not in my DNA. I had to be inventive. To avoid that reveal, listeners will have to read Penelope's Song.
And they will enjoy that as the stories unfold. And during the book, I mentioned that this is a book of romance, history, and thrills, and it will be a very entertaining read for you. The reviews have been excellent for Carol's book, Penelope's Rose. Were there other influences in your young life that pointed the way to Penelope's Song? Any other influences that sort of guided you in this direction, whether you knew it or not at the time that they were guiding you towards Penelope's Song?
Yes, it was, in fact, very early in life When I was in first grade, and I'm so grateful to him, my father did two significant things. He drove me to public library, and I still remember the first book I ever checked out when I was 6 years old. Secondly, he taught me to ride a bicycle. With both, I could explore a wider, more exciting world than our home or schoolroom. In the third grade, the public librarian visited our class and shared two books that have become incredibly rare and valued and esteemed over many decades, Silver for General George Washington and The Secret of the Old Post Road. That was the first road connecting Manhattan with Boston during the 17th century. The library was within walking distance of school. So after class was out and I feared a classmate might get there first, I ran all the way to the library and successfully checked out the books. Thus began my love of colonial history.
And what a gift, a library card at that age. I can still remember getting my first library card and how proud I was, and still use it, despite the fact that many people are like, okay, I can get all this online. Well, no, you really can't, can you? You really need to go in and to sense a library, to walk into a library, even a bookstore for the first time, and look around. It's like Christmas morning, isn't it?
I love it. Yeah, I do. I've picked up many books just by stroking my fingers over the sides of the books on
yes.
just open-ended search that have literally changed my life and my perspective on other people and possibilities. Fortunately, my daughters are good readers, and their little grandson are becoming excellent readers.
Well, you do so much to make all of that come true as you take history and make it come alive in the historical novel Penelope's Song. I've got a couple minutes left in the program. Let's talk now about this transition from the creative Carol, where you've written the story, you've done the research, you put the story together. It's now ready to be published, but you need a publisher to do that. Now it's sort of, I guess, what the business Carol takes over, where you've got to decide how you're going to go about finding a publisher, marketing the book as we're doing on this program. What was that like for you, and how did you find a publisher for your first book?
Well, like probably many other new authors, I kind of searched the web and searched everything I could find about publishers and knew I probably might have a difficult time because at that point, this is both fiction and historical matter. And I wasn't attached at that point in time, it was ready for publishing, to an institution. I was not well known. There were, you know, many things that might have been impediments. However, I was very fortunate. The real Penelope lived through a pivotal time of religious conflict. So it dawned on me that liberty of conscience might be of thematic interest to Cunnett Books Incorporated, a major publisher of Christian books. Asha Vorat, the acquisition's vice president, responded almost immediately to my manuscript submission. My publications assistant, Tina Collins, was always very supportive. I do have to say that they are located in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina. And, of course, many of you probably are aware of the storm going up the coast. And they were in the direct path of this week's storm. So I am very concerned about them.
Yes, hopefully so, they will be okay. And it's such a difficult situation when you see that working its way up the East Coast. And we certainly hope the best for them. A minute or so left in the program. I know you've been working with Reader's Magnet in promoting the book. What's that experience been like working with Reader's Magnet?
Well, one of the things that I liked about them, every time they come on through an email, a text, or a phone call, they immediately state their position and mention Reader's Magnet. So you know it's not a scam once you are involved with them. And they explained everything very clearly, were very patient with me because I was a little hesitant and, you know, not sure just if I wanted to go in that direction with them. But they were so upfront, and everything was very clear, and they listened to me ramble, which was important from my point of view.
Yes.
And it was very positive, and I had some excellent things go out in terms of my display of my book, press releases, and other things and materials that I was able to also use to help further promote my book. And they put me in contact with you. So that's pretty good.
Well, it is. I appreciate that. And I thank them for hooking up us up for the conversation today. A couple minutes left. Time is going by way too quickly. I just want to get your thoughts on the first book. I mentioned in the beginning, this was book number one, A Labor of Love. You've talked about the emotion that went into this, the research, the effort to make this story come alive. What was it like when the book was published? When you got a copy first time, you've actually got the finished book. You see the book cover. You've got your name on the front. What was that like for you?
Oh, that was just so exciting. I mean, yes. I just, you know, I wanted to jump up and down and run around the yard. I mean, because, you know, you go through this very, I started researching the book in the year 2000.
Wow.
I mean, it was a long period of very heavy research. First of all, my family line, my father was the one who had first passed on all of his research, which he did during the 80s. Before we went on the internet, but he was able to connect with a lot of people and relatives still alive and travel around the country with my mother, meet people, go places where things happen, go to, you know, courthouses and all kinds of things. And he did an incredible, both of them did an incredible job. And I told my dad when he started getting back to the early 1700s and the 1500s, I said, Dad, you are almost at the beginning of the country.
Oh, yes.
And this was in 3 or 4 colonies. So I'm going, whoa, this is fantastic. And then when I happened to look up the Stouts in Penelope, I discovered that she was a legend in New Jersey. And I thought, there's some possibilities here for all kinds of things. So eventually all the research led to this concept of a novel. And I had a lot of fun with it because I've always been so serious and so nonfiction, fact-oriented. So it's fun. I never thought I would do something like that.
Well, it's a successful first book. The book is available, again, wherever books are sold, barnesandnoble.com, an excellent place to go. You can go to Carol's website, DamarsPenelopeSong.com. Damars is D-A-M-A-R-S. Carol, I'm going to take a second here. What are you working on now? Another book coming up?
I was afraid you'd ask. I've heard you ask it on other interviews. I did plan a sequel for it originally, but as it happened, the book was published and came out just before the pandemic hit. And I literally had one book sharing when there was lockdown. So, you know, how all of us went into this funk during the pandemic.
Yes.
And meanwhile, my youngest daughter, the whole family moved here to Georgia. My youngest daughter had three little kids, one right after another, including two during the pandemic, at a time when childcare was very difficult. So my life kind of shifted to hers and these other two grandsons. I now have two daughters, came up with 5 grandsons.
Wonderful.
So my life has kind of shifted to that because they're all working adults. And as the kids age up, they can get more, you know, the two oldest are now in public school, but the other family that's located in Woodstock, and we were in Atlanta at the time, it was hard. It was really hard. So I tried to be kind of a backup pinch hitter.
Yes.
Whenever I could. And things have just now fallen into place where I'm thinking again about doing some more writing. I've had several ideas on the back burner, but I haven't done the hard work of those books.
Well, hopefully that will happen, but we can sit back and enjoy your first book, Penelope Song, a 17th century tale for a 21st century world. Our guest has been Carol Damars, D-A-M-A-R-S. Her website, DamarsPenelopeSong.com. Book available wherever books are sold. Send you to BarnesandNoble.com. Carol, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can do this again. A lot of fun talking with you, getting the background, sensing the emotion of the story that you're telling so well in Penelope Song. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. And I think you have a terrific program. Wonderful way to introduce new or relatively unknown authors to the general public, and I do appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to talk about Penelope's song. Our guest is Carol DeMars, D-A-M-A-R-S. Her website, DeMarsPenelopeSong.com. And, of course, all this, and you can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.